I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to Minute 117 of Season 6 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Dean O'Carroll. Welcome back to the show, Dean.
Happy to be back. Happy that we're in the same reality and not some alternate one.
Yes, yes. Just get your taxes ready for tomorrow. Yeah.
Right.
Well, it depends on what reality you're in for that, you know, so. So, Minute 117 begins with...
I've got $8,000 wrapped up in a newspaper right here, so I'm all good to go.
so you're playing Potter. Wait, is that to bribe the IRS agent, or is that just to say, okay, take this and then we're good?
Well, I'll play it by ear. You know, we'll see.
All right, well, good luck with that.
We'll see
one,
what he seems to be in the mood for.
Exactly. All right. So Minute 117 begins with Bert giving George another warning and ends with Ma Bailey opening the door. So we ended things yesterday with, Bert getting a little feisty and wanting the two crazy people inside the house to slowly come out. And he gets a quick warning from Ernie that he's got to be careful. And then Bert continues by saying, come on. And George is just, you know, again, he doesn't really know what's going on here. Because Bert, Ernie, what's the matter with you two guys? You were here on my wedding night. Both of you. You stood out there on the porch and sung to us. Don't you remember? And Ernie just has enough. And he just says, I think I better get going. He's like, I'm out of here.
Yeah, I love that. I love that moment. That Ernie is going through this whole sort of internal drama here that is never the focus, but we get little sort of peeks into it. And there's that where he says he's going to take off, and he doesn't. He does stick around. He doesn't want to leave Bert alone with these two loons. And then just a little bit later, when after George runs off and Clarence vanishes, just his, I need to get a drink later on is a great character note.
Yeah. No, he's great. I mean, again, we know a little bit about him from what they told us, just a few days ago when, you know, he tells Ernie that, you know, he knows him and his wife and his kid. And he goes, what do you know about my wife and kid? I haven't seen, they ran off, 2 years ago or whatever it is. Yeah. You know, so Ernie is not as a happy-go-lucky guy as he was in the regular reality. Because here he has these, familial issues. You know, dealing with his wife and son and stuff like that. But, you know, he's still loyal to Bert. That's the important thing. Bert and Ernie.
Yes. And I do love that. Regardless of how honest the handsome people have been about the connection, I love that friendship too. So I love that there are two pairs of Bert and Ernie's in my life that are paragons of friendship and devotion, despite their differences and their troubles.
Yes. That's right. And it doesn't matter what reality they're in. Right. You know, that their friendship transcends reality. There you go.
I am blanking on the name of the actor who plays Ernie.
Frank Phelan.
Frank Phelan, right. I'm sure I've seen him in other things. I know a bit about Ward Bonds of the Career. I don't think I know what else Frank Phelan did.
He was in The Lost Weekend. He was on 118 episodes of The Many Lives of Dobie Gillis.
Oh, okay.
He played Dobie Gillis' father, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it must have. Yeah, if that many episodes, it must have been a
regular part. It was from 1959 to 1963. You know, so we're talking 13 years after this movie came out.
Yeah, when he would have been about the right age to play the father of a teenager. Yeah,
That's logical. Right. I mean, according to IMDb, he has 224 credits to his name. So he's...
Boy, it's... A character actor could just crank out, you know, 8 movies a year back in those days. It was...
What do you mean 8? There were people that were cranking out like 30 movies a year. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And...
In my holiday watchings this past year for Christmas 2023, I really made an effort to watch some that I'd never seen before this year. And I watched for the first time The Shop Around the Corner. That's how I started.
Ah, interesting. Okay.
And I had seen You've Got Mail, so I'd seen the recent remake of it. I've never seen the She Loves Me, the musical. But I saw that, and it was so nice, sort of bookend, because, you know, It's Wonderful Life is always my Christmas Eve movie, and so this was my start, Jimmy Stewart, and my end, that's a good movie. I really enjoyed it very much, and not only is Jimmy Stewart in it, but there's two other actors from this. Mr. Martini is in it,
yeah,
and the Bank Examiner are both in it.
Yes.
So it's, you know, just, you know. These actors who just, you know, pop up in things in these parts and made a living out of it.
That's right. I mean, I haven't really been keeping track, but I think I had some character actor that had like 350 roles in his career and stuff. I mean, it's just unbelievable the number of roles, you know, these people back then have, and that now is cataloged on IMDb. You know, makes me wonder. Yeah, it makes me wonder how, you know, like, what actor of all time has, like, the most credits? I mean, I know we talked about Jimmy the Raven months ago, where Jimmy the Raven apparently was in, like, over 1,000 movies in a period of, like, 10 years. But IMDb doesn't list credits of Jimmy the Raven. So I couldn't really tell you. We don't have proof as to what movies he was in. You know, they just claimed that it was 1,000 movies. But, you know, I wonder... Like, what's the record? I mean, I don't have the answer to this, obviously.
No, this is something that what is the lifespan of a raven? Because Uncle Billy seems to have the same pet raven for 20 years, right? And that's probably, couldn't actually be within the reality that ravens don't live that long, right? And some birds
apparently do. They actually, from what I've seen... from what we talked about months ago about Jimmy the Raven, you know, they live a few decades, you know, so I don't think that. All right. So to get an answer to the question I just asked, I'm shocked at this. So there is an Indian actor who has been in 1,168 movies. His name is Brahmanandam. I don't know really anything. I don't think I've seen any of his movies, you know. and I've seen over like 11,000 movies in my life, so I don't know. But the
output from Bollywood is incredible. It dwarfs the U.S. Output of how many movies they make every year. Then so
right. Well, the number two on this list is Frank Welker. Do you know that name?
Oh, of course. Oh, sure. Frank, you know, legendary voice actor.
That's right.
Because he's, you know, been in.
That's right.
That includes like parts in video games and things, that I'm sure that's.
It does.
Plenty of TV work too.
So, what do you think? How many do you think there are for him? Just to give it.
Frank Welker. So the fellow from India had over 1,000, right?
Yes.
Okay. I would bet Frank Welker's probably over 1,000 too.
Nope, 857.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. But I remember on, must have been on Star Wars Minute, they were musing, had any actor been in a Star Wars movie, a Disney movie, a Pixar movie, and a Marvel movie? And I don't think anybody has, But my first thought was like, I bet Frank Welker has. I bet he's voiced something. And I think he was one or two shy of, if you only counted like official MCU movies, like, he had done video games and cartoons and so on, which may have had tie-ins to.
Interesting. I mean, I remember them talking about that, but I didn't remember what the end result was of that. So basically, number seven on this list is the first actor that I really am aware of, I guess you can say, and that you know, most people have seen him on screen and not just heard him on screen, and that's Eric Roberts.
Really?
Who has 592 acting credits.
Wow. He's, you know, some of those probably are good, and a lot of them are probably really not.
I wouldn't even say probably. I know that for a fact. he's been in a lot of crap.
Yeah.
You know.
Right, right. That is so interesting. I mean, obviously, both his sister and his daughter have dwarfed him in terms of fame, but that is interesting. He's just, you know, kept on plugging away.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah. Number 14 on the list is Ed Asner. With 404 acting credits. And actually tied
a star in my second favorite Christmas movie, one of my other, you know, must sees every December, Elf, of course. I go back and forth as to whether I think that I like him as Santa. I mean, I love that movie. Sometimes I think that he's the weak point as Santa, that though I love Ed Asner in general. And sometimes I think he's pretty great. So,
All right. And actually tied with him, and probably he'll have the ability to pass him since he's still alive, is Richard Riley. They also has 404 acting credits. He's been in so many things in small parts. The one that jumps out into my mind is from The Fugitive. He played one of the guards on the. On the bus. He's the guy who lost the key.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm sure it's one of those faces that if I saw it, I'd be like, oh, that guy.
Right. Probably. Yes. And then the next person on the list is Danny Trejo.
Really?
He has 395 acting credits. Again, these are some amazingly high numbers.
Chris, I don't know if Danny Trejo is American-born or if he's born in Mexico or another Latin American country.
I believe he's born he's born in Echo Park, L.A. Oh,
okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. So I was wondering if maybe he'd done a lot of, like, Mexican movies that I...
No. Okay. Right. And just a few other people that are on this list. I'm not even going to go into any information about them. But you have Ed Begley Jr. is number 21 on the list with 328 credits. Keith David... is number 22 with 323. Michael Madsen has 309 acting credits. Steven Tobolowsky, shout out to Bubba Weed on Groundhog Day. Actually, he did Groundhog Day and he also did Memento. And he actually interviewed Steven Tobolowsky, who has 274 acting credits.
I just last night watched his episode of Community, where he plays the professor of a class about who's the boss.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Excellent character.
Yeah.
So I'm intrigued that it's so many recent actors, so many currently living or relatively.
That's right. Recent actors. Yeah, me too. I have a feeling that they don't include, because like the last person on this list at number 35 is Martin Sheen with 256 acting credits, but I believe that there are actors from the 30s and 40s that probably have more credits than they do, but it just isn't on this list. But
okay, yeah.
But yeah,
I would bet. Like, how many did we say Frank Frey had?
That's right. We said that, yeah. Frank Frey had how much did we say he had? He had 224.
Okay, all right. Okay.
So,
well, it's a lot. Anyway, as someone who has essentially no screen credits, I do not have an IMDb listing, despite my short time writing for.
First of all, you do have an IMDb listing, and you will have hopefully five more episodes added to it, within the next few months. But you are listed there from the Silverado Minute.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh. That's so nice. I guess I didn't know the podcasts were listed on.
Yes, IMDb. Yes. A few years ago, they started adding the option of podcasts, and Jim puts all his shows up on there, and I put my shows on. And so.
Oh, that is so kind of Jim. Oh, Gosh, well, I could add a few more in that case.
There you go.
So, yeah, I did five episodes of Silverado. I did one of Bowfinger. So, oh gosh.
Yeah,
oh.
I have a feeling that he hasn't gotten around to putting Bowfinger up there yet. But you can speak to Jim about that. He'll tell you where things are standing with that.
Jim, you got plenty of free time, right? Yeah, just take some time out of your day to beef up my credits on IMDb.
Well, it's for him too, because then he gets his producer credits for each episode that he puts up. So there you go. And so back to It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes. And we were going to try to go faster than this episode.
Yeah, seriously. And so George basically, he wants to try and figure out a way to convince Bert and Ernie that they know who he is. And at this point, after George mentions the fact that they sung to him, so Bert then draws his gun, which again, maybe that's part of the law in Pottersville. That maybe it's similar to what you would think it'd be in Hill Valley in 1985. Yeah. Someone is acting a little strange, draw your gun. And then,
Right. And that brings up the idea that, probably this Bert has never sung, or at least hasn't sung since he was a kid, because he lives a life of much less joy. And so, boy, if this guy thinks that I would ever sing a song, he must be totally crazy. He must be worth shooting.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because he's not standing there looking at Violet walking by and saying, maybe I should go home and, and see what the wife's up to for lunch,
Yes. I do love that scene, because obviously Gloria Grab was a very beautiful woman. She's very sexy in this, but that sort of that dress that just blows everybody's mind is kind of just a dress.
Yes.
It's really more about just her attitude and the way she carries herself. Yeah,
yes, for sure. And then Bert tries to calm George down and goes, look, now why don't you be a good kid and we'll take you into a doctor. Everything's gonna be all right. So, I mean, you mentioned that you read somewhere that Bert and Ernie were two of the other kids that were sledding with them. So it's interesting that Bert would call George a kid. I mean, obviously he doesn't know who he is, but he would recognize that he's closer to his age.
Right. And if Bert was married a few years ago, long before George, I mean, he could just have been married young, as people did, and Ward Bond just probably looked like he was 50 years old from his high school graduation, just that he had that kind of face. He could have been a few years old with George and still been, on a sledding day with him if Harry was there too.
Sure. I mean, Ward Bond is basically 4 years older than Jimmy Stewart.
Okay.
So that
Ward Bond was like, he was like John Wayne's best friend, right?
Yes.
They were
yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and Frank Phelan was 2 years older than Jimmy Stewart. So they cast three characters, three actors around the same age to play these characters. So I like the way they do that.
Yeah.
And George pleads with him and goes, Bert, no, listen to me. And then he turns to Ernie and goes, Ernie, will you take me over to my mother's house? Bert, listen, it's that fellow here. He says he's an angel. He's trying to hypnotize me. And Bert has enough of this. And he moves towards him to go. He pulls out his handcuffs and moves towards him. And he goes, I hate to do this to you, bud, but. And so it goes back to what you were saying about the fact that we can still recognize the kindness of Bert. He's not doing this in a malicious way. He's saying, I hate to do this to you.
Yeah, that I think that probably a less skilled or less secure filmmaker might have not included that, might have made Bert completely hard-bitten and awful in this reality. And then put the entire onus of sort of decency for all of Bedford Falls on George's shoulders. And I think that Capra was secure enough and self-assured enough that he knew he didn't have to go that far with it, that there could still be a glimpse of decency and goodness in the town.
Right.
And still we would understand that things are way worse without George.
That's right. Now, I think it's really funny that you just used the word hard bitten, because that's exactly what happens right now.
What happens to him is he becomes literally bitten.
That's right. Yes. He becomes literally bitten by Clarence, who, you know, Clarence just bites his hand. And at this point, Bert ends up, trying to figure out what to do. And then George just runs away as this all happens. And, you know, it got me thinking about, can you think of any movies where a character gets bit in the hand or finger?
Let me think.
There's two for me that came to mind.
I feel like various movies where, like, you know, the bad guy has the girl, to use very reductive terms for both, and maybe is covering her mouth or something, and then the way she escapes is biting the bad guy in the hand. But, you know, yeah, an adult man biting another adult man, or maybe like the little kid is being held captive and he bites somebody. But I can't think of another example of an adult man biting another adult man.
Okay, so the two that I was able to think of is obviously you have Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, where at the very end you have Gollum.
Oh, sure. Oh, Gollum, yeah.
Gollum sure. Biting off Frodo's finger. And then going back just one season for me, last season I did Die Hard 2, and in Die Hard 2, when they're fighting on the wing of the plane, McClane actually bites into Colonel Stewart's hand and actually takes a chunk of it. And spits out a chunk of it.
Yeah, that's another one I revisit. I don't think I'd seen that since I saw it in theaters back when I was however old, 13 or 14 years old. So, so that's a good point.
Yeah,
I revisited that one this past Christmas. I thought it holds up pretty well. I mean, obviously, the original is the classic.
And yes.
It is a passable follow-up, but I enjoyed checking in again with that one.
It was very fun doing it minute by minute. No question about that. And at this point, we have a little scuffle between Clarence and Bert, where Clarence first of all screams to run, George, run, George, run, yeah. And Bert screams out in pain, and then he grabs Clarence, and Clarence goes, Joseph, help me, help me. Oh, shut up! Oh, Joseph, Joseph. And then Clarence just disappears. And then
I was like, that shot is really looks really good.
Yes.
I mean, it's nothing special. It's the same special effects they use in Voyage to the Moon and all those Méliès movies from the 1890s.
I love those movies. But yeah.
Yeah, no, they look so cool, yeah. But it's done so well, and with a little musical cue in there to sort of help with the transition.
Mm-hmm.
It really looks like he just vanished. It works perfectly well. I'm taken with sort of old special effects and old in camera tricks like that. Another one I watched this past year was the 1970 musical version of A Christmas Carol, just called Scrooge. Mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah.
With Albert Finney, which isn't great. It's got a couple of decent songs, a couple of decent moments, but I was very charmed by the 1970 special effects in it, the way the characters would fly and so on, and I think maybe you could even literally see the strings at times. But it was very charming in its own way,
right?
And like Wizard of Oz, 90% of the effects in that still look incredible.
Yes.
Because they knew their limitations, they knew what they could and couldn't do, they knew how to shoot it to make it look good. And there's really only a few things that that seem a little cheesy. Otherwise, things like, okay, yeah, sure, clearly the witch has to run over to where the smoke is about to come out of the floor so she can disappear. I think that was the accident that almost killed Margaret Hamilton. But that works for me. Like, hey, sure, maybe the witch has to disappear in a certain spot because that's the way her magic works. It all you accept it.
Suspension of disbelief, for
and,
sure.
And it's interesting what are the abilities and limits of Clarence's powers in this? Like, he apparently can appear and disappear at will without asking for help from Joseph.
Well, he can't.
Except, but not here.
Not
when he needs to escape. So maybe at other times, maybe we're just seeing him. Maybe he did ask Joseph. We didn't hear his help from this. And he doesn't change history, right? He asked Joseph to do it, or?
To change history?
I don't remember.
He basically asked Joseph to do it, yes.
Yeah, okay, right.
But so the way that he asked him is, like, he just looks around, you know, he looks up and says, oh, that's a great idea. And then we don't really understand the way that he communicates with Joseph or Franklin or whoever he's communicating with in order to make this change, but it's still done. You know, like, it happens behind the scenes, I guess you could say.
I was a big fan of Quantum Leap, the original
Quantum Leap. Oh, for sure. I'm a huge, huge fan of Quantum Leap.
Yeah,
I don't like
it like that.
I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of the new show at all.
I've only seen a few episodes of it. I like it okay, but I definitely have not, you know, sort of fallen in love with it the way that I did with the original.
Yeah.
But yeah, but it's a little bit like that, you know, that Joseph is even kind of like Ziggy or Gushy, you know, and Al would shout out for help.
From, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Ziggy the Handlicker, or Gushy the Programmer, you know, and Mac and so on.
Yeah. Okay, that definitely makes sense. I can relate to that because I'm a big Quantum Leap fan. Yeah. So, yes, it makes sense that he's asking for that, you know, but the difference is that Al was asking for help from a computer or from a programmer, as opposed to, yes, you know, here he's asking for help from above.
From a higher power.
Yes.
And it's the cosmology of this movie is interesting. It's a fairly sort of Hallmark card version of heaven. It doesn't really correspond that much with any actual Christian or other theology. I don't think about what the afterlife is like, and you know angels in actual, you know, Christian thought aren't dead people. Those are saints. Angels are different beings.
Right.
But it's I think consistent within itself. That's all you can.
Yeah, I mean, we discussed it a few weeks ago with when Father David was on. You know, about those type of things. We discussed the theological aspects of things. Yeah.
I will defer to his expertise over my own in that case, and won't expound further on my.
No, that's okay. I mean, as being a religious person myself, you know, he and I differed on certain aspects of how we look at things based on the different religions, but you know. But, you know, we were able to agree to disagree on certain things. You know, it was fine.
Okay. Excellent. It's interesting that, you know, George, when he's praying for this, he says, I'm not a praying man. A few minutes earlier, we heard him saying that he prayed on VE Day and VJ Day. And it's like, but I suppose, you know, like even people who were not routine, regular prayer speakers would have been on those days.
Correct. That's true. And then as Clarence disappears, so Bert is like scrambling around on the ground trying to find him. And he goes, where'd he go? Where'd he go? I had him right here. And Ernie just looks at him and says the line that you talked about earlier this episode. He goes, yeah. I need a drink. Yeah. And then Bert goes, well, which way did he go? Help me find him. And, you know, then we just leave them there as the scene changes. And we see George standing outside of a house, and you can see a sign that says Ma Bailey's Boarding House, no vacancy.
Yeah,
and George,
and of course earlier on, George refers to his house jokingly as the Bailey Boarding.
Exactly. House. Exactly, we discussed that months and months ago about whether whether he really was just using that as a joke, or whether it maybe was something that they did have every so often for some extra income.
Okay.
You know, because it's
plausible.
Because they do have a lot of dishes in the house. So.
That's true. Yes. Which as chairman of the Eats Committee.
That's right.
Harry gets to.
That is correct. And then he rings the bell, and then the door opens, and we see a very disheveled Ma Bailey open the door.
And we'll probably touch on this more next episode about the change in Ma Bailey and Beulah Bondi's performance. But
yeah.
It's a great one.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that tomorrow, because it makes more sense to, you know, when she actually opens her mouth. She hasn't said anything yet. She just shows up here.
Yeah.
Right. And that's all I have for this minute. Do you have anything else for this minute?
No, excellent. I'm so glad we got to have some Bert and Ernie time because of my love for them and for their Muppet namesakes. Yeah, it's oh, it's good stuff. Yeah. Nothing to add beyond this pure admiration.
Okay. All right. So, Dean, would you like to tell people where they can find you?
Sure. Well, you can check me out if you want to find me on TikTok. I'm Dean O'Carroll on TikTok. I do occasional amusing videos. I did a whole series of videos of my holiday watch diary this past December. So if you want to scroll back a bit and watch my takes on some really great holiday movies that I watched, some new discoveries like Feast of the Seven Fishes, and a couple of really terrible ones like The Dog Who Saved Christmas, which I watched because the podcast How Did This Get Made had covered it. So those are kind of fun if you're in a Christmas movie mood from listening to this podcast. And then of course you can find my plays at places like playscripts.com and Hoyer Publishing and Youth Plays and a few others.
All right, great. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com, and you can find me on Facebook. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.